This is the time of the year we see lots of baby animals, and today we're going to be talking about owlets. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Back with us, Carla Bloom, Executive Director of the International Owl Center. It's based in Houston, Minnesota. So as we talk with her, what would you like to know about baby owl behavior? What kinds of owls do you have in your area? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Carla Bloom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again. I always love visiting with you about owls.
Well, it's great. And we've even got some owl sounds. I know we've got barred owls and eastern screech owls and northern saw-whet owls and long-eared owls. We can hear some of those sounds today, so I'm looking forward to that. Tyler Ditter will have those at the ready when we get to those owls. Well, you know what? You've been with us before, but I think it really is worth it to talk again. Have you talk again about the International Owl Center? What's it all about?
Okay. The International Owl Center is the only all-owl education center in the United States, oddly enough. So we focus just on owls. We're a fairly young facility. We opened 5 years ago in a storefront. And we're actually an outgrowth of the International Festival of Owls, which started back in 2003 as a hatch day party for Alice the Great Horned Owl. And then it kind of got out of hand. And we're a town, a small town, less than 1,000 people, and we now have over 2,000 people that come in early March to our Owl Festival. So we realized there were a whole lot of people that wanted to learn more about owls, and so we decided to open an International Owl Center in the little tiny town of Houston, Minnesota.
That's pretty cool. By the way, who is Alice the Great Horned Owl?
Ooh, good question. Who is Alice the Great Horned Owl? She's originally from Antigo, Wisconsin. She fell out of her nest when she was 3 weeks old, and she permanently injured her left elbow so that she would never be able to fly. So she was raised around humans so she would be comfortable as an education bird. Do you hear her in the background there?
I do. Great horned owl.
She grew up as a human imprint so that she would be comfortable around humans. And that made her a very good education bird as a one-on-one, one handler, one bird, because they can also be a handful if other people try to handle them. So I used her as an education bird starting in 1998, before the Houston Nature Center was even built. And she was so popular that our nature center is a trailhead for the Root River Bike Trail. So I was trying to figure out how to bring tourism and environmental education together and came up with the idea of doing a hatch day party for her. She hatched somewhere in early March, so we started bringing in live owls and doing fun family things in honor of her hatch day. And the first year we had 300 people, which for a town our size is a lot.
Yeah.
And within a few years we had people flying in from all over the country, and that's when we realized, wow, people like owls. So Alice started it all. And she's now retired. She's 23 years old now and has arthritis, which some people can relate to.
Yeah.
She's gotten more owly with age, so she no longer has to go to work. She just gets to stay home and be retired now.
Well, good for Alice.
Yeah.
Good for Alice. Gary in Madison has a question for you, so let's go there. Gary, okay. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was just wondering, I have an owl question that relates to something sort of with owls, but I've noticed that sometimes when an owl will come in and maybe perch up in the tree in one of the pine trees in my backyard or the tree, it seems like all of a sudden the crows seem to find the owl and then they just go absolutely crazy about chasing the owl away. Why is that?
Oh, that's called mobbing, and this is an age-old behavior. Great horned owls and crows don't get along, and crows, whenever they find a great horned owl especially, or sometimes other owls, occasionally a red-tailed hawk, but usually if you hear them going ballistic, it's a great horned owl. And when they go nuts, they're basically trying to drive the owl out of the area. And sometimes the owls ignore them. Sometimes they will leave. Occasionally they'll grab one of the crows that's mobbing them. But, yeah, basically other birds hate owls. And the same thing happens to smaller owls. So things like eastern screech owls get mobbed by blue jays, chickadees, nuthatches, things like that. So it's like the other birds are just hatched out knowing that they hate anything that looks like an owl and they should drive it away.
Well, and owls can attack crows at night when they're roosting. Do they not?
Oh, yeah. Owls, especially great horned owls and screech owls, well, even barred owls to a degree, are generalists. They eat whatever is handy, and if they're out and about at night and another bird happens to be handily sleeping on a perch, sure, they will definitely grab them.
So there you go, Gary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. How's the pandemic affected the center, by the way?
Oh, well, we're closed, but we've been very lucky, basically. We had our International Festival of Owls the first weekend in March, and then the world shut down the next weekend. So we were extremely lucky that we were able to do that. So that helped us tremendously financially to be able to weather being closed. So we've been closed for 3 months now. The governor of Minnesota has just issued orders so that we can reopen on a limited basis. So right now we're developing our protocol for reopening and getting the procedures in place and the physical things in place that we need. So hopefully within a week or two, we will be able to reopen on a limited basis, ticketed only. So there will be no walk-ins. You'll have to pre-register online for a specific time slot so we don't have too many people in the building at once. And there'll be a whole long list of protocols so that we can make it as safe as an experience as possible for visitors and our staff.
You know, I'm thinking back, the last time we talked, you were developing plans for a new site for the center. What's going on with that?
We're in site acquisition phase, so there were 5 properties to purchase. We own 4 of them, and we'll probably purchase the 5th one this year. And we're starting to have some discussions with some architectural colleges for some input from students. So we're kind of slowly but surely continuing on in that direction.
Well, we have Rosie in Ashland with something. Let's go there. Hi, Rosie. Rosie, are you there?
I'm not Rosie. This is Susan.
Oh, Susan. Okay. Susan, from Ashland?
No, from Appleton.
Oh, Susan. All right. Susan from Appleton. What's on your mind?
So there's a nesting pair of eastern screech owls about half a block from me, and they've had young every year. I put up a nesting box in a Norway maple about 12 foot high up in my tree in front of my house, but haven't had any luck attracting them to my house. Is there something that can be done to help bring them to that nesting box?
And which owls are they again?
Eastern screech owls.
Oh, eastern screech. Okay.
Yeah, well, part of it is patience. If they've got a good nest cavity that they like, they may be continuing to use that. But bear in mind, since they're cavity nesters, that's going to be in a dead or a dying tree or branch. And at some point in time, that's going to break or fall or be cut down. And that's probably a more likely time they're going to be looking for another place to nest. They do also use them in the winter for roosting. So I'll give you an example. At my house, I put up an eastern screech owl nest box. And for 7 years, I basically gave up. I thought, oh, I'm not going to have any nesting. But occasionally, I would see one roosting in it in the winter because they do need some extra shelter in the winter. And then after 7 years, then we had one nesting in that box. And then occasionally, we have owls nest there. This year, we haven't. I think last year, we did. So it really varies by year. So it just takes a lot of patience sometimes, and I don't think there's anything specific you can do, because if they're already in your area, they know where the available nest cavities are, and then they do a little bit of nest shopping every fall and winter, and then the female gets to pick which one they're going to use. And it's not always the same one from year to year.
Interesting. Thank you very much for calling, Susan. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Is the when are the Eastern Screech Owlets born, and what phase are they in right now?
They should be fledging now, or mostly fledged. Usually, I always think of them fledging right around Memorial Day weekend, and you always have some that run a little early and some that run a little bit late. So the kids should be out of the house by now and flying okay for most of them. There's probably a few late ones, but yeah.
Yeah. Patricia in Madison now. Let's go there. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there, Larry and guest. Number of years back, we had a family of great horns nesting just over the fence line. And that summer, we weren't bothered with chipmunks. So I'm wondering, what and how do you feed Alice?
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, so a great horn in the wild eats kind of whatever. Alice is a little bit finickier. Mostly now, we used to feed a lot of pocket gophers. We got them from trappers, and apparently they're not in Wisconsin anymore. There's enough in Minnesota, there's actually a bounty on them. They're mostly in hay fields, so people were trapping them, and we would just use the bodies to, they would cut off the front feet for the bounty, and we would feed the bodies to the birds. But now there's Roundup Ready alfalfa, and they're spraying alfalfa for aphids, so I got uncomfortable with that, so now we feed mostly rats from a breeder, but we do supplement with, there's a person who lives like way out in the middle of the woods, completely away from others, so we make sure that anything that he would give us doesn't have the chance of being poisoned by a neighbor or something like that. So occasionally she will get a chipmunk or squirrel or rabbit or quail or mice to supplement the rats. But rats are kind of the primary diet that she gets.
There you go, Patricia. Thank you for calling. Our guest today is Carla Bloom. Always great to have her with us. She's executive director of the International Owl Center based in Houston, Minnesota. She'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a look now at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Carla Bloom. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Sounded to me like a barred owl there in the background of that music. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Carla Bloom with us. She's executive director of the International Owl Center in Houston, Minnesota. So what questions do you have about owls? Do you think you heard an owl call? We've got some owl sounds for you, too, here as we go through the show. Join the conversation. Give a call, 800-642-1234. And, Carla, that maybe Tyler can play that barred owl again. Tyler, can you play that again?
Fun.
Fun. So that's the barred owl. Who cooks for you, huh?
Yeah, so barred owl calls are really variable. So the primary song, if you will, is Who Cooks for You? Who Cooks for You All? So it sounds like, oh. So what was played was kind of like an ascending hoot sequence, and sometimes they'll just do a oh, but then they'll also caterwaul and get into ah. And they also do a scream like a woman being murdered. It's a, ah! So they make, if you hear really insane sounds out in the woods in the middle of the night, it's probably a barred owl.
Yeah, I've heard, I've had a number of people call the show asking, you know, saying they thought they heard a woman screaming in the night, and usually the answer to that is, well, it was likely not a woman, but a barred owl.
Yes.
Rosie in Madison has something for us. Hi, Rosie.
Are you there?
Yes. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Actually, I'm in Ashland, and I have a riddle for you two.
Okay.
What do you have when you're all done giving your baby owl a bath?
Oh, what? I think I know this one.
What, go ahead.
It's a moist owlet, right?
Yep.
That's a great one.
Rosie, thanks for that. And there's probably, you've probably heard all of them, Carla, at one point or another.
I won't say all, but a lot. We actually have that one posted. We have some lame owl jokes in the bathroom at the Owl Center, and that's one of them we have on the wall there.
All right, well, now you've got to give us one more before we take another call.
Oh, I have to give a joke? I can do an owl call.
All right. Well, an owl call is good, too. Give me an owl call.
Okay. I will go with the simplest one there is to do. The long-eared owl does the simplest stereotypical owl call you could ever think of. It's just simply, whoo. And then about a four-second pause. Hoo. And then a pause. Hoo. Anybody can imitate that one.
There you go. Well, thanks again, Rosie. Appreciate it. Erica in Lake Tomahawk, we go to you next. Hi, Erica.
Good. Oh, it's afternoon now. I just wanted to mention, well, two things. We waited 13 years for barred owls to to go into our nest, and they were there every year for 4 years, and then the tree managed to die and fall over. So we put up a new one. We put up a new one. We figure, by the time I'm 75 or so, I'll have another. But we did have a little adventure over Memorial Day. We had a baby barred owl fall and got caught. Got his talons caught in a tree branch, spun around about three times, and then grabbed it with the other one. And I went out there. This bird is, I measured it, my feet were 12 feet off the ground. I climbed up a ladder and hoisted him up and got his feet free, and then I had an angry owl in my hand. 12 feet off the ground. It was an adventure, but we thought by the time we call wildlife rescue or something, he'll be dead. So it was a riot, but it all worked out. He was flying around. Well, we got to watch him climb the tree by hand, and whoa. I mean, he's popping his beak and getting all testy with me, and I'm like, dude, I am just seriously trying to help.
Yes, they don't always understand when you're trying to help. So what he was doing, probably some hissing also, but that bill snapping, they rapidly snapped their bill together, and that's a, as you know, back off, leave me alone. And if they're able to, very often they fan out their wings to make themselves look big, so that's called a defense display. So although afterwards he probably appreciated what you did for him, probably was not appreciating it at the time.
At the moment. Thank you very much for calling. Skip in Winona, Minnesota, we move to you now. Hi, Skip.
Hello, and thank you, Carla, for being on the air with us. I had an experience probably a decade ago where I found an owl that had been hit by a car and was still alive. And at that time, I wasn't sure what to do with it. And the best thing I could do was put it in a box and figure out if I could get it to the Raptor Center in Wabasha or something. I found it by Reed's Landing. Sadly, it did pass away in the box. But it didn't put up any defense mechanisms when I went to get it off the side of the road. Was there something different that I should have done with it? Or is there somebody now, if that happened again, where I could contact somebody that would know better how to handle the animal?
You did everything right. If they don't do the hissing and bill clacking and defense display, it just means they're in really bad shape. Some people will mistake that to think, oh, they're being very tame, but it means they're in really bad shape if they don't put up a fight. And you did the right thing. You pick them up, put them in a cardboard box, put a towel, T-shirt, something like that on the bottom of it, but you want to keep them quiet, dark, and just away from pets and kids until you can get them to where they need to go. So in Minnesota, that would be the Raptor Center in St. Paul. So even though you're in Winona and we're in Houston, just south of you, it would still need to go up to the Raptor Center in the Twin Cities. We're not a licensed rehab facility. Now, if you're in Wisconsin, there are several more options of where they can go. Or if you're in other states, if you go to our website, on the left side of the menu, there's a thing that says, I found an injured owl. And that is a page, where can I find a rehabber? And it's a page that links to every state's rehab site. So wherever you are, it will help you find the closest wildlife rehabilitator to you.
And your website is International Owl Center?
Yep, internationalowlcenter.org.
All right. Skip, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Ron in Beulah, Michigan, up next. Hi, Ron.
Hey, thank you. I have a question. Wherever I've lived, probably 7 or 8 different places, near a park out in the middle of Portland, Oregon, and in the Upper Peninsula, I've always heard barred owls. And I perfected my call to try and call to them occasionally. Now I'm living down here on a dirt road. There are houses on the road, but several hundred acres of woods, mixed pine and hardwood. And I've been here 3 years, and I have not heard one owl. And I come out in the middle of the night because I miss them, and I want to hear them call. Do you have any idea why there wouldn't be any barred owls or owls of any kind in this area?
There should be something there, especially if you've got hundreds of acres of woods. There should be something there for sure. I mean, you may have the small ones like screech owls, but you should have either barred or great horned owls there. But there's a chance that maybe the primary part of their territory that they're using is far enough away, and if the woods are dense enough, the sound may not be traveling well enough for you to hear it where you are. But they should be there someplace. It would be almost unheard of to have that kind of habitat and not have owls in it.
I was thinking of great horned owls. I mean, they're really everywhere, even though seemingly we don't often hear them or see them, they're around for sure.
Mm-hmm. And some individuals are less talkative than others.
Yeah.
And great horned owls don't talk as much as barred owls do, but you get some individuals that don't say a lot. And another contributing factor is if they don't have close neighbors, they're probably not going to be saying as much. We had an incident here where when West Nile virus swept across the U.S. in 2006 and just slaughtered great horned owls, the resident pair here, our neighbor pair, the female died, and our resident pair ran the male of that other pair off. And then this pair that was living here that was resident had a massive home territory, but they didn't say much because they didn't have to defend it against anybody. So that could be a contributing factor also if they don't have close neighbors.
Interesting. By the way, Carla, can you see the photo that was sent in from a listener?
Let me check. Yes. Oh, yeah, fantastic. That is a baby saw-whet owl. Where did that guy come from?
I got it. I don't have information on where that came from.
So a baby saw-whet owl does not look like an adult saw-whet owl. And saw-whets are the smallest ones we have in the eastern United States. And the babies are just crazy colored. They're like pumpkin orange on the bellies, chocolate brown on the head, and then they've got this white V over their eyes and on their forehead. Totally adorable little things because they're just tiny and so differently colored than other owls.
I didn't have it figured out at all. So there you go. Baby saw-whet. So now I know what one looks like.
Yeah.
They're very cute. Joe in Viroqua, your turn now. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good afternoon. I live in town, and late last summer I had a family of what I believe were screech owls. They never screeched, but anyway, for about a week long they came to our backyard every evening, and then this past Monday I was going out in the backyard, and I hear about 4 or 5 robins putting on a mighty screeching sound. And I said, uh-oh, what do we have around here? And there I spotted this single eastern screech owl. And then later on, four or five other ones joined it in our backyard. They must really like our backyard. Now, and these guys that I saw Monday night, they look like they were fully grown. Were they hatched this year and grown already, or you think they're from last year? And another thing, they have the most subtle sound. It sounds like a whinny, and it's really neat. I wish you could put a whinny sound on there.
Well, I think we have. Well, you could probably do it, Carla. But go ahead.
It's kind of a. And it's not, you're right. It's very subtle. It's not loud. And screech owls don't screech. I don't know why they were named that. Everybody assumes juvenile great horned owls doing their obnoxious begging calls are actually screech owls because those screech.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, screech owls do that soft whinny, and they also do a trill, kind of a. I'm not fantastic at it, but it's in that ballpark. But again, a subtle sound. But you were asking about if the ones you saw were fully grown.
Yeah.
And they're probably, at this age, pretty close to fully grown. They wouldn't be completely feathered yet, but on a screech owl, it's a little bit subtle to tell what fully feathered is and what isn't. But when they fledge, they're close to adult size. So size is a real tough thing to use to tell young ones apart from adults. The better gauge is their head fully feathered or is it still fuzzy? So if you look really close, a young screech owl is still going to have fuzz on its head till at least midway through the summer. They're going to, before the adult feathers grow over that fuzz on their head. But in a screech owl, that's subtle.
Yeah. Tyler, I think, has a screech owl clip as well. Tyler, have you got that clip? There we go.
Beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. Joe, thank you very much for calling. Steve in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Hearing about the barred owls being able to scream like a woman brought up a memory for me of when I was a teenager and my friends and I were hanging out in a cemetery and we heard a scream that sounded very much like a woman in trouble. And when we rushed to find out what it was, there was an owl involved, but it wasn't the owl that screamed. It was the rabbit that it killed.
Oh!
Yeah. And a rabbit can make a really terrifying scream.
Mm-hmm. Dying rabbit calls are pretty horrific to hear.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Steve. Interesting story. I had a kind of that experience a while back. Probably, well, I'm not even sure, 20 years ago maybe, where I heard the screech and I looked up and there was a hawk that had a baby rabbit in its talons, or a younger rabbit in its talons, and the rabbit was screaming in a very, it was hard to listen to, hard to hear. Glenn in Spooner up next. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Say, I've got great respect for the great horned owls. I was bow hunting in a broken-out tree. I was up about 15 feet in the air with no branches above me. And all of a sudden across the way, I saw this owl in the tree. I thought, oh, great, I get to watch an owl. And it went, rrr. It was a weird kind of sound, just a sort of a hoot. And pretty soon behind me, I heard another rrr. And before it was all over, I had four great horned owls dive bombing me. I took my arrows as self-defense and just kind of swooshed them in the air, and I tore all the feathers off the ends of my arrows. I finally had to climb down. I thought, gee whiz, they're driving me out of here. And I was going along the edge of a field along the woods, and they kept on dive bombing. I had to break into a run all the way home.
Wow, that's unusual. So if you had four around, you probably had mom and dad and a couple of kids. And mom and dad, I would assume, were being protective of the kids. And usually when they are, they'll do kind of a wah, wah. Or sometimes it's single or sometimes it's multiple. But it's basically kind of an alarm call. Mom and or dad might do it. Sometimes the kids do it also. But it's not usual that they're that aggressive, that they would physically go after you. Some individuals are far more aggressive than other ones. I mean, these birds have different personalities, and some are mellow and some are mean. And apparently you met up with some really tough, mean great horned owls, because that is a heck of a story. That usually doesn't happen, that they're that aggressive, but wow. I mean, I certainly believe that they could be,
yeah.
But you found some exceptionally aggressive ones.
Glenn, thanks for sharing that with us. And Kevin in Black Earth, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago, I was going out to get the paper in the morning, opened the door, and two of my cats came in the door, and I walked out, went down the driveway, and here's a little baby owl right in the driveway. I sitting there looking at me, I gently captured it and put it in a little cage we had in our shed, went in, read up on what to do quick, made a couple calls to see what to do, and went out, it was out of the cage. We looked for it, couldn't find it. Looked on the front lawn, there's a little owl. Caught that. Went in the house, looked out the window, and a little tree right by the bird feeder, there's another little owl. Went back to the shed, we finally found the other one, ended up with three. So we called Madison Rescue. They said, bring them in, because they couldn't fly. So they said, bring them in, we'll take a look at them. They did. Brought them back out after calling us and said, let's put them back up one of your big maple trees. We got 4 60-footers in the front lawn. And they did. All three of them were on that tree. We have a picture of them and a video when they're in the little box that we put them in. And we never saw them after that. And I did hear the parrot that night up in the trees.
Okay. Well, great. So you did something very right, because young owls will often fall out of the nest, leave their trees, whatever, before they can fly well. And they wind up on the ground, and they're pretty vulnerable to both cats and dogs and things like that. So sometimes they're injured when they fall out. A lot of times they're not. But since you were close enough, you could take them in to a rehab facility and have them checked out, which is absolutely ideal. And they must have determined that they were healthy and could go back. So if they're young enough, sometimes you need to build like an artificial nest if you can't get them way back up where they're supposed to go. Yours seems like they probably were branchers, so they could just simply get put up on a branch and be okay. But those first few days out of the nest are really vulnerable for them. So if you do find young ones on the ground, very often they don't need help other than just putting them in a safer place or keeping pets inside for a few days until they're flying better.
Thank you again, Kevin, for calling. Carla, you have an owl chat coming up tomorrow. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so since our facility has been closed to the public and we can't do our regular programs like we normally are, we started doing Thursday morning owl chats. They're more informal on a variety of different topics. Tomorrow's is going to be about owl feathers and molting. So we'll cover things about how they molt, which feathers they molt, how do you tell what's a wing feather, a primary, a secondary, a tail feather, and where you can look online to identify feathers. Because people do find feathers on the ground, and very often they say, is this an owl feather? And we'll talk about how you tell what is an owl feather, and also talk about the laws that relate to feathers and why it's not legal to keep feathers that you just find on the ground.
So sounds like a lot of fun, and people can get involved in it?
Yeah, all you've got to do, it's free. Just go to our website, internationalowlcenter.org, and on that homepage, scroll down, and you'll find a link to a Zoom room that you can click on. It'll be tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central Time, and it runs for about an hour. So you'll get let into a waiting room. We'll let you in just a little bit before 11. If you need help with Zoom and you're not familiar with it, please sign in 15 minutes early, and then we'll give you a little Zoom tutorial so we can start the program at 10, and we'll bring a live owl to show you at the end of the program.
Carla, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
I always love being on your show, Larry, and talking about owls.
Carla Bloom, Executive Director of the International Owl Center, based in Houston, Minnesota. Thanks to her, and thank you for listening. Tomorrow at this time, home improvement specialist John Freiberger joins us. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.